Welcome to the Too Many Notebooks podcast. I'm Ben Mullins, and today we're going to have an interesting conversation with another interesting person. I have Amanda Hinote. Is it Hinote?
Hinote.
Hinote. I've got Amanda Hinote with me today. And Amanda, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah. So, hi. I'm Amanda Hinote. I live in St. Charles, Missouri. I'm a major airline pilot. Captain on the Airbus 320. I've been flying for many years. We also have a seaplane company, Flying Fish. We do instruction and rental in the Sea Ray.
When did you start flying, or like what around what age?
So I was 15 when I went for my first small airplane ride.
Okay.
My dad had been a private pilot in his younger years before I was around. When I was growing up, we went to air shows and things, but he wasn't physically flying. He was a mechanic for TWA. And so he had, you know, instilled in me kind of an interest in aviation. And then I was a teenager. He ran into an old Navy buddy that said, hey, we have this Navy Aero Club at this airport. You should bring your family out for our annual picnic. So we went and I got an airplane ride. It was sunset. It was a bonanza. It was beautiful. I was hooked.
The sunset flights are probably my favorite flights.
I know, right?
Absolutely love them.
And it was, a guy with a bonanza who loves flying and loves sharing flying with new people. And so, you know, I was hooked. And so my dad actually started maintaining the aircraft for the Aero Club, and they paid him in flight time, and I'd go use the flight time up. So, and then I later instructed for that club. So that Aero Club, which, it's no longer a Navy Aero Club. It's a private flying club in Kansas City, but they were integral in my, you know, getting started in all this at such a young age.
Did you go the instructor route? Is that how you built time?
I did. So I decided in high school that's what I wanted to pursue. So I continued to fly, and I got my private pilot license right around the time I started college. I chose to go to an in-state college that had an aviation program. That was cheaper than going away to one of the big name aviation programs. Mm-hmm. And then completed my degree, came home in the summers to do flying and work at the airport, pumping gas, work at the FBO. And then after college, I instructed through that Aero Club and also through another flight school in the area.
Okay.
And then my first 135 job was flying freight, single engine freight out of Kansas City downtown airport. And that was a good time builder, although it was single engine. And then eventually I was able to get on with my first regional and flew my tail off. So I got hired at Mesa Airlines with 1,200 hours. And we flew 1,200 hours a year. So I've been flying for 10 years, but I doubled my flight time in the first year. Like, it was crazy.
That's a lot of flying.
Yeah. Yeah. So instructing, I mean, most people are going to instruct as one of their stepping stones. There's really no working around it, and it's a great experience. But it's, you know, an hour in the air and then a couple hours on the ground, and an hour in the air and maybe an hour on the ground. So it's harder to actually fill up your logbook that way than longer.
A couple of weeks or a couple of months ago now, a woman reached out to me over social media, and she messaged me and said, hey, I'm not a stalker. I'm sorry that I'm messaging you, but my daughter is like 14 years old, and I saw that you graduated high school with a private pilot's license, and we have no idea where to start. So that mm-hmm. was kind of some of the inspiration behind this episode and then another upcoming episode. So that's kind of what I wanted to talk to you about today, is because you are a woman in aviation, and that's super inspirational to a lot of people. Is there any hurdles that you, ran into or had to overcome being a woman in aviation?
Personally, no. I don't feel that I was ever denied a job or promotion or any of that based on gender. I mean, early on, there were some captains that were kind of jerks, and you wonder, well, is this because I'm a woman? Is this because I'm young? Like, there's really no way to tell unless you you know, talk to one of your buddies that also flew with the guy and be like, hey, is that guy just miserable to everybody? But that's just human interaction. But as far as actually getting hired, I've been very fortunate. But I know there are stories. So back in the day, I know there are women that were told, we can't hire you. There's no ladies' restroom here in this small corporate flight department out of this small hangar.
Oh.
Really? Really? I know women that were told, you know, quite a few women that were told, no, we can't hire you because you'll be flying with this guy and his wife would not like you going on overnights with her husband. So, I think that still happens. I have read on the female Facebook groups that there's still this kind of thing happening, which amazes me. Or we can't hire you because we're not sure how the customers will view that.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to think that doesn't happen at all anymore, but I definitely knew of people who were told that when it came to small, you know, corporate or charter flight departments. But the flip side of that, with the major airline, well, with all big jobs, the affirmative action programs that are in place are ensuring that we're not discriminated against. But I'd like to say that I feel like they also kind of do us a disservice.
Why is that?
So, I mean, the history on that is an airline was sued for discrimination. So they then had to, you know, really plus up their numbers of hiring minorities. So it was well known that in a certain decade at a certain airline, if you're a white male, don't even bother because they're really plussing up their numbers of minorities.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you hire someone who has less time than the competitive qualification standard, you're not only doing a disservice to their co-pilots, teammates, passengers, et cetera, you're doing a disservice to them because they now are in this job where they may not be ready to be there yet. And they have to constantly feel like they're proving themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I met a woman captain at this airline years ago and just in conversation said, so what's your background? And she's telling me that she got hired. Oh yeah, I was really young when I got hired, but my dad had this twin engine plane and I built a lot of time. And she sounded really defensive. And I was thinking, you know, I'm not attacking you. But then it occurred to me that she every day gets asked, well, how did you get here? And sometimes it's innocuous, but sometimes it probably is like, well, how did you get here?
Mm-hmm.
And so she felt like she had to, you know, defend her resume every day to come to work. And so anyone who is hired for affirmative action reasons, I believe that they have this kind of sign on their back and they have their whole career to kind of deal with that. I don't know. Fortunately, I actually interviewed at that company with very low time and didn't get hired and was devastated at the time. But in hindsight, I'm so glad because I then went and flew freight and flew for the commuter and did this and did that and came to an airline when I actually had the right amount of experience to where I did fit in and never felt like I got hired for other reasons.
Okay.
So I believe and I've said this for years, and with everything happening in our country now, I really still believe it. The best way to take race and gender out of it is to take race and gender out of it. Take it off the application.
Right.
Try to obviously you're going to interview in person, but to de-identify applicants, whether it be for college or for jobs, it's the only way to get past this
mm-hmm.
Divide. So anyway, that was kind of a long-winded way to say there, it may help to get hired to be a minority once you get to this stage, which I hate that it's even a factor, but I would tell young girls, like, don't worry, you're going to get on at the airlines. But the hard part is the boys you're going to flight school with are going to give you a hard time and tell you that you're going to get on no problem because you're a girl. And that's not true either. You need to have your act together.
Mm-hmm.
And there's still this misconception that we're, you know, cutting corners and allowing and hiring greater than the proper ratio of people. By that, I mean, if 5% of your qualified applicants are women, then around 5% of your new hire class should be women.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, unfortunately, there don't appear to be a lot of people of color in this field. But if 1% of your qualified applicants are of color, you know what I mean? Like, you shouldn't see a picture of a new hire class at an airline where there's not a single white male in the picture.
Right.
And there's still this misconception that that's happening. But I'll tell you, I looked at the last two new hire pictures at my airline and they were all white males. So don't let anybody, that would be the other thing I tell you. So don't let anybody tell you, you know, that as a white male, you're getting skipped over. because you're getting hired too. Like, everyone's getting hired. We're hiring like crazy. All the airlines are.
Right. I think one of my friends is an FO for one of the major airlines, and he's like, dude, we're hiring 1,500 people this year. Like we're hiring people like right off of like being a CFI with almost no exactly. like multi time.
Exactly.
Like, whoa.
right.
How many airplanes have you flown?
So I'm currently on the Airbus 320. I just came off the A350 as a co-pilot, which is the biggest airplane my airline operates now that we've parked some other ones. I came off the 757-767. I was on that for about 10 years. And prior to that, I flew the mighty DC-9. And at the commuter, I flew the Beech 1900. So, you know, nowadays everybody flies RJs, but back then, a year and a half at the commuter got you either left seat in the Beech or right seat in the jet. So I upgraded to get some captain time in the Beech 1900. So that's been my path.
Awesome.
A lot of people like going to school and like learning a new airplane and go to a new airplane every 2 years. I'm not that person. I flew the DC-9 for a decade, the Boeing for a decade. So I've gone to school twice in the last 4 years, and that's unusual for me. But
no, I definitely understand that. Now that I'm getting into, I guess, bigger and, I guess, quote, better, because I don't know if they're better airplanes. I don't know if there's a better airplane, you know. from a 172 to like a 182 or an Archer or like an Arrow, like as generally move up just a little bit in the general aviation airplanes, like, in their size and their engine power, it's a lot. I mean, for me, it's a lot. And they're small airplanes. They've got a very finite number of systems. And then like switching in between them is so confusing. I'm constantly like learning new checklists. And
exactly, yeah.
Same flow.
It's a lot. And the airlines used to allow dual qualification. They would check you out in your new airplane, and then you could still go fly your old airplane. And fortunately, the FAA put the kibosh on that years ago, because that's really unsafe. You've got to dump, you know, we dump the old airplane when we learn the new airplane generally. So, but for you guys, time building, you're going to hop in anything you can get your hands on. So I think the advice there is, you know, take a minute. If you're going to be flying a plane the next day that you haven't flown in a while, don't be so cocky that you're not going to sit down with the POH and look over stuff.
Right. So, going back to a little bit, this mom that called me had a ton of questions, and I answered them to the best of my ability, but she wanted to know, like, how should a young girl get started in aviation? Like, do you have any like specific insight or advice that you would say, well, this is probably one of the best paths? Because they were looking at some of the Part 141 schools.
Okay.
And
well, so I would go. Okay, so if you ever talk to anyone interested who's young, between 12 and 18 years old, and interested in aviation, not sure how interested they are, tell them about the Young Eagles program through the EAA.
Okay.
Because every EAA chapter at almost every small airport in this country gives free airplane rides to kids once a month.
Right.
And so that's a really cool program. Go to EAA.org. And I know you did that when you were young.
Right.
So that's a really, yeah. Good.
Yeah. now I'm flying for them.
Yeah. And that's the other thing I was going to say, which we'll get into that later. But, So if they're not sure and you can't take them for an airplane ride, definitely direct them to that. I do that all the time when I've got like families with kids that visit the cockpit. If the kid looks like they're really into it, I'll be like, go to EAA.org, look up Young Eagles, okay, and you can have an airplane ride. And I was commuting, sitting in the back, and I could hear a kid behind me. She was little, but she was interested. She was watching the ailerons and the flaps, and she was like three. And so I wrote out the information and gave it to her mom. I'm like, when she's 12, take her to your local airport, because this girl is going to be a pilot. So, but anyway, I would say that for young kids. And then as far as where to fly, I mean, if you're still in high school, obviously you're looking at the local flight school, mm-hmm. and that's fine. These 141 programs, you know, I don't know exactly how it works as far as transferring. I assume if you come there with your private, you don't have to do anything. You can just start with your instrument.
I'm not sure. I had a friend that kind of did that, and they didn't like it.
Yeah, see, they really want to start you zero time, right, and mold you into their ideal student. So honestly, my advice on that has changed fairly recently. For years, I would say, don't feel like you have to go to the big name flight school. I went to my local airport. I went to my local university. I did it the cheapest way I could, because in the end, you need a degree, and you need your ratings, and you need your flight time, and you need some experience, and then you go get your job. But that's still the case. You can still go that route. But this pipeline program that the major airlines have, they've partnered with universities to where you're going to go to that university, and then you're going to instruct for them, and then you're going to fly for the regional, and then you're going to go to that major. And it's a pipeline program, and Delta has one, United has one, I believe American has one. So there may be some value now in setting your long-term goal and saying, hey, I live in Georgia, I want to work for Delta Airlines, so I'm going to go to Auburn because I know they're part of this Propel program, and so on and so forth. So there may be some value in those pipeline programs. But I still feel like if you're just comparing apples and apples, flight schools and flight schools, and not concerned with the end result, then I don't know how much value is in those big name flight schools.
Right. I was talking to a couple of instructors from one of the big name flight schools a couple of weeks ago, and I had asked them. I said, "Well, are you guys instructing as like part of like one of the cadet programs, like Delta Propel or mm-hmm. Whatever Southwest? I think Southwest has one, and some of the others."
Yeah.
And they're like, "Well, not really. I mean, you could say that, but not really." And I'm like, well, mm-hmm. what do you mean? And he goes, well, we don't have the grades to get into one of the cadet programs. And and that kind of like it took me back a little bit, because I was, well, that's like one of the biggest parts of a 141 school is being able to get into one of the cadet programs. And
right.
And,
well, they're not going to necessarily not get hired. They're just not in that pipeline.
Right.
So I guess the majors are going in and interviewing the kids at the school and trying to figure out, and they're not professional pilots yet, so they're having to use different parameters like grades or extracurriculars, okay, I guess, and figure out who do we want. It, and that's hard. Who are we going to want to fly with in 10 years or however long it takes them to get there? I guess it's a little less than 10 now, but.
What do you think some of the skills are that have helped you out? Because I especially now, I've been doing a lot of research about like self-development and like the application skills, having effective communication, being able to like lead people and having good time management and stuff. Is there anything that?
Yeah, that's all great stuff. I would say just kind of like I just said, being flexible and willing to, you know, don't get tunnel vision. Widen your scope, look for other opportunities besides what you thought you might. Resourcefulness, being able to, well, for instance, I had trouble building multi-engine time. So I got a bartending job and earned as much money as I could in a short amount of time to go buy some multi-engine time. So, mm-hmm. you know, if I were in an interview back in the day and they look and they're like, well, bartending job, you know, thought you were going to be in aviation. Well, yeah, I needed to buy some multi-time. So that showed, you know, not that I'm not interested in aviation, but that I'm doing what it takes to make it in aviation. I would also say to do other things to beef up your resume other than just the things in that pipeline. So Get your seaplane rating, get your get your glider rating, get your go, like you said, Young Eagles program, fly for them. Do the Pilots for Paws, fly puppies to their new homes, or whatever activities you can do on the side that are aviation related, beef up your resume, give you stories to tell. Once you're in that interview, they are talking to people much like you all day long. You have to have something to stand out. And so tell me about a time that you had a problem and had to solve it. It's going to be a more memorable story if your problem happened in a seaplane or with 12 puppies yipping behind you. You know what I mean? Or with a kid in the back on their first airplane ride. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're doing these other things in aviation, I think it shows that you love aviation. You're out there doing it. You're not just, you know, I'm an instructor, then I'm a regional pilot. Now I want to be a major pilot. Like, mm-hmm. You've got to think outside the box and
right.
do other things.
And so growing up, I grew up around you. And you were probably a huge influence in me becoming a pilot, or me being even remotely interested in aviation. Like, I remember walking through Oshkosh, and you're like, oh, what's that? An elevator, an aileron, you know? And that's those are things that I remember now.
Mm-hmm.
Is there like a good way to influence kids towards aviation? I mean, not everyone is going to become a pilot, or not everyone is going to do this job or that job, but there's so many different jobs in aviation, not only flying, but I mean, there's mechanics, there's brokers, there's insurance people. Anything that you can think of is probably also in aviation at least a little bit. Is there any way to like influence that?
You know, the only thing I can think of is really, you know, I haven't since COVID, but go to the elementary school and talk to the kids about careers in aviation.
Okay.
You know, go do career day things. And then just when you're out and about, I guess, like at Oshkosh or on an airplane, you know, the mentality these days, people don't generally open the window and watch the wing, watch the takeoff and landing anymore. They're on their devices, right?
Yep.
But if there's a kid who's looking out the window and their parent is busy on their device, maybe you can be like, hey, do you want to know what's happening out there? I can tell you. I don't know. I mean, it's hard because everyone's kind of in their own little bubble nowadays, mm-hmm. But I guess just looking for that spark, and if someone has an ounce of interest, try to fill it in. Hey, there's this and this. I don't know.
Yeah, that, I mean, I think that's a pretty good question that a lot of people ask now, is like, how do we get the younger people into aviation? Like we want them to fly. I don't know a whole lot of people that are my age that are into flying. I know there's like a lot of people out there that are my age that are into flying, but I just don't know personally.
It's not right. It's not something that really occurs to people. And that goes back to the question about, you know, girls in aviation too. Like, it all goes back to, you know, visiting third graders and telling all of them that they can do whatever they want. And here's an example of something that they can do.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when you get into, you know, lower income parts of town or whatever, that they don't know anybody that's in aviation. I mean, it just never occurred to them.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go and tell them, hey, you can do this and you can join the military and they'll pay for your flight training, and you know, this could be a great opportunity for you. I think if we all just tried to share that it's an option, that maybe that would, you know, plant the spark in some kids that otherwise wouldn't have it.
What was the inspiration behind you and Chris own the seaplane club? What was the inspiration behind that?
Well, it came about in kind of a circuitous way. We were in St. Thomas, and we were sitting on the waterfront, and we're watching the seaplanes take off, which everyone does when they sit on the waterfront in St. Thomas. Seabourn serves St. Croix from St. Thomas, so if you're going over there, you're going on a seaplane and you take off from the harbor right there, and it's really cool to watch. But if you're not going to St. Croix, there's no way to go for a seaplane flight in St. Thomas. So we thought there should be like a tour operator that flies around St. Thomas. So I'm the kind of person that thinks, oh, that's too bad there's not a tour operator. My husband's the kind of person who's like, we're going to start a seaplane tour company. And so we did. So we bought a 185 on wheels in California and flew it to Texas, where it got put on floats, and flew it to Missouri and flew it to St. Thomas and started a seaplane tour company. Because, you know, why would we do something easy? Like, you know, start a Jimmy John's franchise. I don't know. But we did tours there in the winters, and then we brought the airplane home and did training in Missouri on a lake in the summers. And it was really fun. And then we got out of the 185 and got into the Sea Ray. It's a lot cheaper to operate. It's a light sport two-seater, the Rotax engine that burns auto fuel, a third of the fuel plus auto fuel instead of avgas. So operating cost is a lot lower. And that was enabling us to charge a better price and allow us to get more people flying. And so that kind of morphed into that flight school and rental program, because the 185, we could never insure people to fly it solo, but the Sea Ray were able to, with a 15-hour checkout, they're able to rent the airplane. So that was something that other seaplane operators aren't offering. So it kind of set us apart a little bit. So that's kind of how that came about, the long way.
Okay. Yeah. I would, that's something I was going to ask you is like, the insurance and stuff. If you guys had a hard time finding someone to insure you, because, one of the people at my local flight school just bought a seaplane, bought a 182 on floats, redid the entire panel. Everything from the firewall forward is new, bigger engine, reversible prop.
Oh, those are great.
And he's paying somewhere in the realm of between $13,000 and $15,000 a year.
Yeah.
For two people on his insurance.
Yeah, it's really expensive. Well, general aviation insurance in general has gone up a lot in the last few years. There were a couple of tornadoes that took out a bunch of airplanes in Nashville. Do you remember that? There have been some natural disasters that cause losses. And then there have also been, you know, some accidents that drive the prices up. So, yeah, that's definitely a challenge. And yeah, it's something that my husband has talked about, you know, trying to go and talk to the underwriters and kind of educate them on seaplane operations and how, you know, the safety things we have in place and, how it's not that dangerous and they shouldn't be afraid to insure us and all that, but it's kind of hard to carry that out. So
what have been some of the, have there been any ways to help you afford it? I mean, cause it's, I mean, relatively expensive to get into.
Yeah. It's way more expensive now. And I don't really know what to tell people to do about that. I was really lucky. Like I said, my dad was the mechanic for this flying club, and the flying club itself was super cheap. I flew a 150 for $25 an hour, 172 for 35, and T-34 Bravos for $45 an hour. I mean, I flew a T-34 to Oshkosh for $45 an hour. Who can do that today?
Right.
So the rates were low. You know, my dad working there helped, choosing to do as much flying as I could through the club. So instead of staying at my university through the summers and flying airplanes that cost double, I came home and flew those planes. Choosing the in-state university, you know, I made the choices along the way that were the most economical, and it allowed me to come out of school without debt. I don't think anybody comes out of school without debt nowadays.
Right. And I know, I would say networking is huge in aviation. Especially because, like, there's so many different people out there that are like, well, I don't really fly my airplane.
Yeah.
But it needs to be flown.
Yeah.
So I think that's a major part of it as well, is networking with different people, because a lot of times people are willing to help you out, especially in aviation.
Yeah, that's true. And that goes kind of along with that whole you know, being flexible and being willing to hop on an opportunity, you know, hang out at the airport. It sounds lame, but if you're hanging out at the airport and somebody's got an empty leg in their King Air, maybe you get it. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe you don't, but you definitely don't if you're not there.
Right. And that, as boring as that sounds, it for me at least, it's turned out to be more interesting than I could have ever thought.
You've met all kinds of people.
I made a lot of connections with people at my airport. I've seen a couple of engine outs. I've seen an engine fire. I've seen someone land with no landing gear, or like they land and the landing gear pop.
Wow.
Like the wheels pop.
Huh.
there's a lot of interesting things that happen at the airport that most people never see.
Yeah.
Because they don't think to, I want to hang out at the airport.
Right.
Normally it's, no, I don't want to hang out in the airport. I want to get home.
Right.
But I think that's definitely a big part of it is networking. Because in any career, networking is a lot bigger than I think a lot of people see.
Yeah.
Typically.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, you know, with social media, it's a lot more prevalent to make connections and and kind of keep in touch with those people than it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely important and something you're really good at.
I think that with social media, though, it also like makes it a little bit harder to network with people, because now like people are, I think that we're used to like seeing things happen.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not really used to asking any more questions because I mean, you see everything that's going on with social media,
right?
But there's an aspect where I think that the creator only shows what they want people to see.
Exactly.
And you don't really see behind the scenes, like, oh, they're at Oshkosh and they're flying with the air shell team.
Mm-hmm.
I want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you do that? Mm-hmm. You know, like the behind the scenes and all the work that goes into an event like that or any moment, I guess.
Right. Yeah, that's a really good point. I guess you get to know the person off of their main feed and see, like, how did you get there?
Right. And that's something that I've been trying to figure out. Like when I go to air shows now, originally it was, I want to go see airplanes.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's like, I want to meet new people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
and talk to everyone. Right. See how many of these other people love aviation.
Right. That's good. I think that's key. That helps open up the possibilities to these other side things that are not only fun and interesting, but make you more marketable when you're going to look for a job.
Mm-hmm. Also, a little bit of side note, you're going to be the
inaugural guest.
Yeah, the inaugural guest.
Okay. I hope both of your listeners enjoyed it.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for being on.
All right. Well, yeah, it was great talking to you. And as always, call me anytime. And I wish you the best of luck in your endeavors.
Awesome. Thank you. Before you go, though, is there one piece of advice that you would give someone who's looking into an aviation career?
I think what we were just talking about. Get out there and be in aviation. Don't just step on your stepping stones that you need to get to your end goal, but go be in it, whether it's like you're saying, go to air shows or airports or hang out or meet people. And that's going to introduce you to things you're not even thinking of yet.
You just go do stuff.
Just go do stuff. Just be open to new things and just go do stuff. Somebody says, hey, I got a ferry and airplane to the Bahamas. Of course you're going to go. Or what, you know, whatever. Hey, have you heard of Pilots for Paws? I'm flying, you know, I'm going to Orlando to pick up a bunch of puppies. Of course you want to go on that. Mm-hmm. Of course you make that happen. So I think that's I think that's my advice, is just to be open-minded and flexible and resourceful and willing to just jump on whatever seems like a good idea at the time, within reason.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much for being on. We'll see you around.
Okay. Thank you.
Awesome. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
And that's a wrap on this episode. Thank you so much for listening. We hope to see you join us with our next episode. Bye-bye.